It's Thursday, March 13th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 333 of Through the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 38 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
This is John.
And this is Chris.
Sojourn. Wayne's got his copy.
Holding it right now.
Yeah, I just gave Wayne his copy. You need your copy. If you have not grabbed a copy of Sojourn yet, we'd love for you guys to go out there.
I have three copies.
Your friends need their copy. Your family needs their copy.
So go out and grab a copy. Once again, it is 15 stories of speculative fiction. So basically sci-fi, fantasy, horror, things like that. Written by 15 authors. And we grab people. They're all associated with Fear the Boot somehow. It's hosts. It's community members. It's people we've interviewed. And we would love for you to get out there, grab a copy of the book, leave us a review, do whatever you can to help us make this thing the success that I believe that it ought to be.
3 out of 5 podcasters on this episode have stories in here.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah.
Chad's not a writer, and John
I told
missed
you,
an opportunity.
I told you I wrote a story. My pen name is Beth Roper. You guys don't believe me. I guess the pen name thing's working.
Something else I want to draw your guys' attention to, it's a little bit less fun, but it's important. Let me give you guys kind of a quick bit of history that does not directly involve us, but does very indirectly involve us. Podcasting as a technology was put together by several people that really kind of pioneered how it was going to work and how it fit into this thing called RSS, which is how you consume your podcast. And one of the people that was really instrumental in getting podcasting going and is still with it today and has one of the more successful podcasts out there is an ex-MTV VJ by the name of Adam Carolla. And as you probably know, podcasting is still a pretty nascent form of communication. I mean, you're talking about, it's only been around about 10 years or so. But what has happened is a patent troll, I believe, in Texas, has come along and has basically made Adam Carolla their target and has claimed that they have a patent which is being infringed upon by the very platform of podcast distribution and consumption. Now, I don't know exactly what the patent reads as. You can find all the stuff online. These are all matters of record. It's not like, you know, this is just some rumor. But here's the basic problem is if he wins that fight, either because Adam Carolla loses the court battle or because Adam Carolla cannot get together the funds to fight this battle or to do what's called deep watering, which is where you make the case so expensive the other side just gives up and walks away, then what will happen is they will now have an established court precedent that podcasting is a patent infringement. And then what's going to happen
like
is
all
podcasting. And so what's going to happen is this entire art form will be shut down before it really ever truly had a chance to take off. That's not just going to shut Adam down. That's going to shut everybody down. Every podcast out there, including ours, will be gone in short order. So I'm going to put a link to a couple things in the show notes, and I might be able to get these off one link, but at least all this information will be present, which is a link to the information on what's going on with the suit, and also a place where you can donate to Adam Carolla's legal defense fund that he has set up to fight this case. And we actually had to kick this one around a little bit because here on Fear the Boot, apart from gaming and helping the needy, we generally try to avoid associating ourselves with causes. But this is one where, I mean, it affects what we do. I mean, this affects, once again, all of podcasting. And so we felt we really couldn't not say something. It's kind of in the same way that if there was ever a resurgence of the moral panic against D&D or something like that, I think we'd have to say something about that. And this is one of those things. Anyway, I'll try not to belabor the point, but please do take a look at those links and take this seriously because this is a real deal thing. This is not somebody we just run around their hair on fire over nothing. All right, so let's get back to the beautiful art of podcasting and let's talk about player secrets. Let me kind of give a little setup here, and then I'm going to kick it to John to give us his wasabi theory of character creation. One of the things that I ask for as a game master when I run a game is I ask for the players to give me plot hooks, things that I can use in the game to draw them in and to make the plot personal to them. And this could be anything. It could be they have a debt they owe. It could be they have lost touch with their wife, or it could be even something positive, that they're an heir to a fortune but don't know where to find it. But it's just something that allows me to really bring up something that's going to hit home to this player and that character. In many games, when I'm handed these, some percentage of them are secrets, meaning not just the player that wrote it doesn't know. For example, someone might write, there's something going on with my uncle. He disappears for long periods of time and I don't know where he's going. Okay, so that's a secret from everybody. Nobody knows it. But it'd be more like saying, my uncle is a member of this Lovecraftian cult that represents the very dark power we're fighting against in this game.
Or even...
And only I know it.
Or even something like, we're all playing in this game, and everybody knows I'm human, and I'm human, and I've told everyone that I'm human, and I'm human. But my uncle is a werewolf, and I'm a werewolf. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, so only the game master and the player knows. And so you have these secrets around the table.
Now I'm thinking about how cool would it be in game to have Chad say, my uncle sneaks off, I don't know what he's doing. And then have me sit down and say, okay, Chad's uncle sneaks off, and here's what he's doing. How cool would that be to have the secrets that are there be different levels of secrets between the different players? You could just have the one secret and everybody knows a little piece of it around the table.
Mm-hmm. That would be awesome. So that is an interesting take of, okay, so if I'm following this right, Chad's uncle sneaks off, and let's say there are 10 points of truth to this, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe there's five only you know, but between the five players, Chad knows A, John knows B, Chris knows C.
The only thing I've pitched is... my uncle sneaks off.
Right.
And that's all I,
but
Chad,
between
knows.
The group of, between the group, you might have a clearer vision of
right.
the truth. But
yeah, no. You just all have to, at some point, communicate with each other. Now,
right.
You'd have to have a pretty good group and a good game. Otherwise, it's going to be, okay, everybody ready? You know, Eric Okra, you got your dice, you got your whatever. Okay, first game, first session. Hey, Chad, your uncle sneaks off because of this and this and this. And yay, we solved it. Okay, let's go bowling.
I'm going to work this into a future campaign in some way.
He's actually the planter's peanut.
Oh, my God.
But he's allergic to peanuts.
Dun, dun, dun.
He's a were-legume. All right.
I might work that into a game, too.
So, John.
I love it.
Go.
Okay, the wasabi theory of player secrets. Best use lightly, if at all. I find that player secrets are usually not as interesting in practice as they are in theory. I'm not going to go so far as I did on the last episode with GMPCs and just upper deck the toilet and then flush it. But I will say that it is usually something that slows down the game for little good reason in the conventional murder hobos finding the one ring type of game. I understand in certain games, especially of the sort that Chad likes to design, play, and run, secret mechanics propel the entire game, and they're certainly necessary and proper there. So Silent Memories, yes. Pathfinder, no.
Yeah. And in the setup for this, Dan was saying, you know, oh, you know, it's like Chad and John are really going to throw down and rumble on this point. And I think John and I are in total agreement on it.
I think we are.
It's two sides of a coin,
I'd
though,
say,
right?
I'm further on the other side in that I think every player should have a secret.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, here's the thing is that John is like, no, but, and I'm more, yes, but.
I think that's probably why I thought there'd be a bigger brawl between you two, because I thought both of you were going to upper decker each other, to use John's wonderful analogy.
I would never upper decker John.
Okay.
Ever.
So, Chris, hold on, though. You started to say something.
I was just agreeing with Wayne in the sense that I am a definite advocate of player secret, regardless of the game, regardless of the genre. I think it's a necessary component. Certainly, it has to be non-disruptive in the sense, you know, if you have characters sneaking off in the night and every time they go and make camp or every time they dock into a spaceport, that can become a little problematic. But
every time there's an NPC conversation that revolves around the secret and the NPCs, whether they should or shouldn't, talk in these undefined pronouns all day long while the GM and more often and more intensely the player titter about how they know something you don't.
There's a good way of doing it and a bad way of doing it, you know, taking genre and game type off the table. Although, John, I think you and I are going to have to circle back around and explain why we think it's a bad idea for Pathfinder. But on this point, there's good ways and bad ways of doing it. So there's a J.J. Abrams way of doing a secret, which is, I think, what John and I are talking about, where there's a secret. There's a mystery, and I'm talking about with Wayne, and Wayne's the NPC, and Dan's running the game, and, you know, all the other players are sitting around while there is this one conversation. It's not spotlight, it's sucking the light out of everyone else where no one knows what's going on. And it goes on. And it's like Lost. The secret goes on and on and on. And there's no release. There's not even any buildup anymore. It's reached its critical mass of buildup of care within the players.
And I think
any reveal.
Even worse than that, you can hit a point where story progression gets hobbled by this.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that everybody except one person is operating in this vacuum of complete ignorance. And actually, the example I was going to give for this, where I see this all the time, is Final Fantasy. I cannot tell you how many Final Fantasy games I have played where Carl and I, once again, she loves to watch and play these games. She likes the story. We both want to reach through the TV screen and just slap the out of the characters and be like, look, if you would just stop, you know, oh, what's wrong? Nothing. And just tell everybody what's going on.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, exactly.
Dot, dot, dot.
You just tell everybody what's going on. They wouldn't judge you. They'd help you. And you would have had this problem solved the first hour of the game.
We all lived at the same orphanage.
That's exactly how you can make it work, by taking the sort of reverse of that. What you just said, if you just say something, we can all help you. When you make a secret in a game, as a player, try to do it as an opportunity for other players to get involved in your character.
And I want to stress, I want to stress both sides of that. The first was your phrase, as a player. Mm-hmm. If the game master is the only one that knows the secret, presupposing the game master's not being a jackass, that's what we call plot.
Yes.
Okay? This is not a problem. Once again, unless the GM's just somehow being a real jackass with a secret. But the problem comes in specifically when it's a player doing it to the other players. And then the other half of that you said is that you make that an opportunity for people to get involved in your players. Say, look, my uncle's sneaking off, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Can you guys help me figure this out?
What do you think is going on why does your uncle keep sneaking off? Dot, dot, dot.
Well, you guys are all hitting on my reason for saying that every player should have it. Because if one player has it, it almost always ends up being a problem. If every player has a secret, then you don't get into some of those pitfalls.
Well, let me ask you a question, Wayne. Isn't that really, instead of, let's say we have four players, isn't that instead of having one problem, having four identical problems?
No, because when you have one secret, every time, just about, it ends up, the campaign pulls to that one secret.
Okay.
And you get stuck down that one line. It can become flavor if everybody has a secret and things are constantly being revealed throughout the game. But when there's one secret, that one secret almost always takes the spotlight.
I'm going to say something. You guys can mark this on your calendar and give an exact date, but I don't know. I think I'm going to release this episode probably Thursday. But so mark this on your calendar. This is one where, despite the fact that the secret comes from the player, I put the blame with the game master. And here's why. When a player is coming to you and says, I want to have a secret that only I know about my character or the plot, nobody else knows. The game master at this point has really two things that he or she ought to do. One, say to this player, okay, I'll give it to you, but don't be a jackass to the rest of the party with it. It's really not fun for anyone else if we go through a dozen sittings where you're having what John and I have come to term pronoun conversations. Mm-hmm. He, they, never give names, never give specifics. Just keep dancing around these things.
It's not a weapon wielded to make your character special.
Right.
It is an opportunity for everyone
else. And when people ask you about it, you play it off like there's nothing there. Okay, so that's number one, is you ought to be saying to the player, I'll give it to you, but you have to be at least somewhat open with the party about this in discussion. Or number two, the game master has to take it away. And what I mean by that is not ditch the secret, but the player character wants to play this real close to the chest. I know my uncle's sneaking off because he's a were-legume, but I don't want anyone else to know that. And at some point, the game master just says,
I don't want anyone else to know that, just out of embarrassment, really.
I think it's a fantastic character idea. But anyways, the game master at some point says, look, Chad's uncle sneaks off, comes back, and in the morning you find a top hat, monocle, and cane by him.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and it's... And the game master at some point says, look, if you're not going to let the other players in on it, for the sake of the health of my game, I'm going to let them in on it. And so I will place the blame typically with the game master on this one, because look, you as the game master know the secret, which means you have the power to stop the player from abusing that secret.
The player's secret to me, the way I view these, and it's very similar to what Wayne had described before, these are the episodes of your favorite show where it's the character development episode, where it becomes brief side journeys that may or may not have some relevance to the main plot going on at the time, but they still involve the other characters around the table. But yes, it's a spotlight moment, and it's for, you know, maybe a certain time being, but absolutely everyone does still have to be involved. That individual, you might as well just lone wolf then at that point if you're going to be sneaking off and doing that kind of stuff all the
time. Yes, here is my litmus test. Dan, you proposed a litmus test for GMPCs. Would they freak out if they died, the GM that is, versus the GMPC? I have a litmus test for player secrets. Would the player possessing the player secret out of character consent to let people in on it out of character, even if they were not in on it in character? I think if the answer is yes, that connotes they're working on something for the overall improvement of the drama of the game. And if the answer is no, that connotes they want to be special and have something you don't.
I think that's a good now, I don't think you should always bring the whole group in on the secret, because then you can lose some really good game moments. But that is a good test, as if the player is willing to or not. Not that you are going to.
Now, I do want to bring up a point, too, of there are secrets that a character can have that the other players just don't ever need to know. That actually fail your litmus test, but it's okay.
Give me an example.
So the example I would bring, like, I'd say, Dan, you're running the game, and I bring this to you, and it's like, okay, Dan, I have a player secret. My parents killed themselves in a really horrible, grisly murder-suicide, and I don't want any of the other players to know about it. And I explain this to you. What I'm doing with this is that is a secret that is influencing how my character feels. You know, what it's kind of what motivates, not so much in a I'm Batman and I'm stopping murder suicides sort of way, but more of there's a certain darkness to my character. And, you know, I get mopey when two people are married and happy or something like, you know, I'm being very broad and silly, but,
right.
But that's the sort of thing. It's like, I'm using it as just a motivating factoid, a motivating data point for my character. And I even tell you, it's just like, you know, if you want to do something with it in your plot, you can, but really it never needs to be brought up. I'm never going to bring it up. But I'm just going to use it to motivate
myself. And I'll say that's a big difference there, is it's not really a part of the plot.
Right.
And I think another tact the Game Master can take to help limit this problem is to kind of tax the backside of it. Mm-hmm. To say, okay, you want a character secret that only you know. I'll give it to you. And I'll give it plot significance. But you only get to know it in so far. Mm-hmm. For example, this is a 20th century, 21st century game taking place on Earth. You know that you're actually a lizard person from the lizard person conspiracy theory.
Am I the queen?
I don't know. I'm just coming up with
some. No, I want to be the queen. That's the secret.
Okay, you can be the queen.
Yes! All right.
But,
or I should say,
you have not been let in on the know. So you don't know what it is that the lizard people, along with the masons and so on and so forth.
Because I'm too powerful, because I'm the queen. Yeah, I can't know.
Precisely. Okay. Yeah, and so you don't know. Mm-hmm. So you might know something the rest of the party doesn't, but you don't know it inside out. And then at that point, my task now remains of, okay, I still have to avoid the pronoun conversations to the point of being a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, a little bit of mystery is fine. Somebody's got a secret, takes you a little bit of time to figure it out. Yeah. Great. And I think this is where I'd move the onus back to the players, is the other players, I think, need to be a little bit confrontational. If mm-hmm. someone in your party is obviously holding a secret that is of plot importance, I mean, think about it in real life. Let's say you're sitting around a table and it's six people, you know, you and five of your buddies, and two of them are having this long ongoing pronoun conversation that you know impacts you in some way. How long are you going to put up with that? Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, I say, look, your ass needs to talk. And if we put this in a role-playing game,
it doesn't even have to be confrontational either. It could be like, okay, your ass needs to talk. This has been going on too long. Or it could be like, hey, man, are we friends? Because I think we're friends. We've been through a lot. I see you hurting. That's what we call role-playing.
Yeah.
And that's why these secrets need to be opportunities.
And I think the reason I said confrontational is because
it's a go-to.
It's a possibility, but I think more of that is if the player refuses.
Oh, sure.
So you say, oh, hey, I'm your friend. We tell him, no. Well, at that point, especially in the context of a role-playing game where you're probably dealing with serious, within the context of the game, life and death type issues, that's not funny anymore. This is like keeping secrets in wartime. I mean, this isn't funny anymore. It'd be kind of like, look, you really need to talk, but we're not moving from this spot until you cut through the BS and give me something. And I would at least put that much on the player characters to do.
You know the kind of secrets I like in games?
Sexual.
Well, those two. But no, ones that are minor, that have to do with, you know, the way a character behaves, but have the potential of doing plot. So for an example, I have a character concept in mind of a paladin who never swims and avoids the water. And then his secret is that as a child, his sister drowned and he failed to save her. So now he has a phobia of water. That is a character quirk of his. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't his sister, if it's his girlfriend who now has an angry brother who can be brought into the plot because he failed to save her, and something minor to that character, it may never come up in the plot. But if a GM wants to, it could.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other quirks I've done is in a one-shot superhero game, I made the stereotypical cat girl was one of the characters, and her secret was that she actually really hates cats.
She's neither a cat nor a girl.
No, she only had a...
What is the deal?
She's a dog man.
What is the deal?
She had cat-based powers, and she wanted to be famous, so she created a cat girl persona. Mm-hmm. But in reality, she really hates cats.
Hmm.
And it's like a little quirk like that can come up and be fun in-game, but doesn't have to become the spotlight of the whole game.
Yeah.
And Wayne, I have kind of a similar feeling in regard to that, to a certain extent, like the thing that Chad described earlier about if his character's parents, the whole murder-suicide thing, and that was something that only he knew and only I knew. For me, that's a goldmine of things where I could interlace somewhere along the storyline and the plot things that I know would personally affect that character that would give him an opportunity. You know, it's almost, in a certain sense, it's an inside joke. You don't have to have those pronoun type conversations, but you can lay these things out here which you believe should theoretically disturb that character.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the enjoyment out of watching him role play that particular thing. The other players around the table, they're going to see him behave strangely. They may notice it. They may chalk it up to just nothing. They may make a mental note for later somewhere down the line. But it's almost like it's a little hidden inside moment that you do have a one-on-one with a player. Nobody else really knows about it, and it doesn't really disrupt the game. In fact, it actually does the exact opposite. It enhances it, particularly on the GM side, because there's a lot of that satisfaction that you can take away from that session because of those little hidden, stolen moments, basically.
Yeah, if you're a GM and you're relying on a player knowing a secret to be your plot, I think you've made a mistake along the way.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because there is this exception that we've talked around by virtue of a game title, but I don't think we've really discussed or explained, particularly for the uninitiated here, which is at the start of the episode, John and Chad both agreed that there's this exception for games like Silent Memories.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to go down a huge rabbit trail dissecting Silent Memories.
Oh, let's.
But could you guys award-winning
yes.
Silent Memories?
Yes. Any award-winning. Yeah.
So could you guys talk about what those kinds of games are? Because they're based entirely on character secrets.
Right.
And why you feel those work, whereas the Murder Hobo Pathfinder game does not.
Yeah, and I disagree that it doesn't work in a Pathfinder game. I think it's great even in a Pathfinder game.
Well, yeah, which is...
I honestly didn't even understand it when you explained it when we were talking about this topic earlier. I could not wrap my mind around the core concept of what you were explaining.
Well, let's talk to Dan's first point here, which is my game.
Let's talk about me.
Yeah, let's talk about me. But, well, like a lot of indie games, you take a game like Lucid, which is a game where the players fill out character sheets. They are questionnaires.
Yeah, but it was written by a real
asshole. I know, right? But, yeah, that one didn't get an any, so screw that guy. The characters fill out questionnaires, and there's not a bad guy. You're actually the bad guys. There's actually usually a good guy, and you're trying to steal something from him. The game master does not go into the game really knowing who or what that guy is, what his motivations are, why he's there, what it is they're trying to steal. In the questionnaires are different for each of the players. There are questions asking about, the character is called the Mark, asking about the Mark, asking what he's like or how the player knows him or this, that, and the other. And what the game master is supposed to do is take all of those questions about the mark, pull them all out, and create a composite that is this character. Now, all of these individual characters somehow, in some way, know or know of the mark in a way that is secret. They all have some, at least a tenuous connection to the mark, and it is a secret. The game mechanic itself is based around that.
We played The Secret Life of Gingerbread Men.
Yes.
There's a game mechanic based around your character will have a secret. There are quite a few games like that out there where that's built into the game. And I think the reason it works so well is because that was something that was thought of when the game was designed.
Right.
It wasn't something added to the game after the fact. It's inherent in the game.
All right. So is that the delineation? Is that, Wayne, to just repeat what you said, that that was the purpose? That was an integral mechanic, even if not per se numbers and dice, but this is an intent of the game, as opposed to this is not the intent, but it just so happened to occur anyway. Is that, John, would you agree? Is that the delineation here?
I don't know if the express intent of the author is a good yardstick here or ever, but it certainly, again, connotes that it's a good idea.
John, would you say it's because these are all basically one-shot games?
That is something I was going to get to. I believe that player secrets work better in games with a lot of momentum, a lot of punch, very little setup, wind up, and takedown. The drum I always beat is RPGs take too long to get going and don't get there quick enough. And I would definitely agree with that, Wayne. I think that giving yourself a scenario where everyone is free to play gloves off and do whatever they want, and that is the narrative. We're going to live with the roles. If we all don't get along perfectly, so what? And so on and so forth, like in Silent Memories and some of the other games we've been mentioning, that definitely helps. I think, as to Dan, your prior point about everyone being a little too accepting of the pronoun conversations in character around the campfire, part of that is for that reason. It's because we all sort of play with a regulator on, usually, in that we do not want our characters to too harshly confront one another. We know that most of the time, however an intra-party conflict ends, it will not end in a character storming off and leaving the game, or in fisticuffs, as the same conversation may well end between a PC and an NPC. I would say that a shorter game is per se more conducive to embedded secrets, whereas merely the GM contemplating it is a good symptom, but not a per se condition of a good setting.
I don't know if I agree with that part either, because I have played in, evidenced by anecdote, I've played in a lot of games that went on for a pretty long time where the characters had secrets and that not everybody knew what the secrets were. I mean, I look at the game with Gnarl. Gnarl had a lot of secrets that he wasn't telling other people. He had a litter of pups that he was keeping a secret until there was a plot reveal. It was great roleplay. Again, it was an opportunity.
Right.
And it was made to be an opportunity that affected. And the cool thing about a secret, or a good secret, is one that there is buildup going to, then there's release, and then it causes ripples throughout multiple games.
Yes.
And let me talk to that one specifically, because there just plain cannot be enough Gnarl stories.
Dan, you and I need to write a game. Like, you know, everyone is John, everyone is Gnarl. And then we can just win an award, and all we do is talk about our game.
Well, actually, I'm still waiting on it, but there's a strategy game coming out. It's a tabletop game, and Gnarl and Rot have been accepted as characters for it. So I
that's hilarious.
Quote unquote licensed it. It was just really more of a PM. Hey, why don't you use these two characters? So I'll keep you guys posted on that as that develops. I'm still waiting to hear more on that.
I want my nickel royalty.
One of these years, I am going to go back. I want to do something more with Gnarl. I don't feel like I'm done with him as a character.
No, you shouldn't be.
I don't know if that's fiction. I don't know if that's a role playing game appearance. I don't know what it's
going to
be.
Maybe it's Sojourn 2.
Maybe. Well, not 2, but it could be 3. Well, it could be 2. I could go the fantasy route.
Gnarl,
I don't know.
In the winter.
Crap.
Gnarl in winter, yes. Yeah. But anyway, all right. So the point being, let's talk
about... Oh my God, you're writing your own fanfic.
let's
make it slash.
Let's talk about that secret. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. Gnarl had a pup, or a litter of pups, with his sort of second in command, who had actually taken control of the clan during a time he was gone. And he actually had to...
Workplace romances never work.
Yeah, well, and being Knowles, he actually had to re-dominate her into submission and all this kind of stuff to
doggy stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I was about to say doggy style, not actually.
No,
no,
it was nothing sexual. It was just he had to reassert pack dominance.
Right.
It was just the way he did it.
Yes. No. There was no sexual violence in this game. All right, but the point being, when I came up with that secret, am I big into kids? No. Mm. Okay, I don't hate kids or anything like that. I'm not anti-kid. But
you're a great uncle.
But yeah, thank you.
And you're like, yeah, I have a f-ing good uncle.
Yeah, but the point being, though, that when I came up with that secret, I knew who someone it would affect, which was Pat. Because I know Pat has a really big thing about kids.
Yes.
And so I knew that for Pat, a powerful way that I could draw him into Gnarl's narrative, his sense of legacy building, in a way, I mean, I realize this may be the wrong term, but to humanize the character in a sense, was for him to say to Pat, I'm going to trust you with one of my deepest secrets, which is the fact that buried in a hidden area beneath the keep we're building is a place where I have my pups, and I'm not telling anyone because of the fact that these pups are too vulnerable.
No.
And so they were being raised, you know, by mostly by his mate. I don't want to call his wife, but by his mate. And here's the point. I made that secret for Pat's enjoyment. Now, it was a secret about my character, but I think here is another litmus test you can consider when looking at this. If you are the player coming up with a secret, here's the question you ask yourself. Is my secret purely for my enjoyment, or will it add value to the game for anyone else? Yes or no? And if the answer is no, then you've now got another question you need to ask, and you need to err on the side of caution, which is, will my secret in the process of adding value to me only detract from somebody else's role-playing enjoyment in a significant way? And once again, err on the side of the caution. And if the answer is yes, and you need to revise what's going on somehow.
You know, there are a lot of different kinds of secrets, and I think just about every kind was involved in that particular game. There was the secret of Pat's character that the other characters didn't know, except for Dan's character, that all of the players knew. So it was
That was a big change, was all the players knew.
All the players knew.
Yeah.
But the characters didn't.
The characters had to act ignorant. And here's the thing, Wayne, let me ask you. Do you believe that that kept it from becoming a problem? Because even if your character was Sir William, right? Even if he didn't know, Wayne knew.
The only time it became a problem was when the group got a little bit small and my character was the only one that wasn't in on the secret.
Restricted your role play.
Right.
Everybody was talking about this great thing that you did not have access to.
Exactly. You know, the secret was there and all the players knew, but none of the characters knew except for the one character, I don't think it would have detracted. But that was a case where it got down to my character was the only character that didn't know, and it left me out of conversation.
You don't want to make a boys' club.
Yeah.
The secret. You don't want to make, this is the club, and everybody's invited, but you're not.
There were secrets in that game that the one player would know that the others wouldn't. There were secrets that
I didn't know about.
Everybody knew.
I didn't know about the pup thing.
Yeah, there was a secret that the GM didn't know until
I didn't want to know it either. It was an awesome reveal. Wow.
I believe that is the first character I've ever played who had children. Certainly the first one I've ever played that had children mid-game. I don't know if I've ever played a parent, but if I did, like I said, it was certainly never. If that child was already there from the start.
You didn't roll the pregnancy dice enough.
I really point to, though, that says that secrets can work, because there are multiple moments of that campaign I can point to and say that was a really cool moment because no one else at the table knew what had just happened. And Gnarl revealing the pups was one moment. My character revealing that his former fiance was an elder in another city now.
Right.
It's like everyone around the table was jaw dropped then too. And I don't think that would have had the same impact if Pat knew that Gnarl had pups hidden, then it wouldn't have had the same impact.
You know, because that was the game where I played multiple PCs. Even my PCs were keeping secrets from each other. Rot was lying to Gnarl about the reason he was there.
Yeah.
And I'll hold on to why he was there, because I don't know if I do.
Because Sojourn 2.
Is Sojourn 2, or whether that's a revisit of that campaign as role-playing, I don't know what. But
Gnarl in the Winter. That's the title of your story. Gnarl in the Winter.
Gnarl saves Christmas. That is the story I'm writing.
It's really just a normal Gnarl story where he's like going around killing people, eating people. He's just in a really tacky sweater.
Right.
That's all. That's the only difference.
Yeah, he's in this tacky sweater. He's claymation.
Nobody knows where he got the
sweater.
And
he's just on a murder binge. He just really doesn't happen to realize that what he's killing, like, is the Grinch or something.
Right.
Well, he's hungry. He starts eating reindeer.
He kills him. He eats him. It's like, oh, that thing was threatening Christmas.
Gnarl versus Krampus. You have a series developing here.
Yeah, yes. I do. And then he can do all the holidays. He can do all the holidays. Yeah.
Gnarl eats Arbor Day. Now, see, try and think about that. How would you make that work?
I was thinking Gnarl eats the Easter Bunny, but...
Well, that's too obvious, though.
True.
Yeah, and then he has to learn the true meaning of Easter and become the Easter Bunny and deliver all the eggs. Yeah.
The
Easter Knoll?
The Easter Knoll, yes. We know that would work out well.
Oh, okay.
Got it.
That joke was a dog.
Yeah, maybe we should pause this recording here.
At least we're on the tail end of these puns.
Yeah, we are.
You guys are hounding me.
The fur's really flying now.
Oh, man, you got my tongue wagging trying to think of something else.
You can't come up with any rule for podcasting, a single clause.
Oh.
All right. Well, before the show falls into a rut, let's go ahead.
I got that.
Yeah, bam. That's how we're going out.
You're going to throw everybody a bone here now?
Oh.
We're going out like the Titanic. On our way down. Imagine the Titanic exploded on its way down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Chad said, fear the boot. We'll never jump the shark. We will ride that bitch into glory.
That's right.
So anyway, check the show notes. Sojourners out there, we'd love for you guys to have a copy. And also, there is that whole thing going with podcasting. So please do take a look into that and consider what you want to do about that, if anything. But it really is a big deal. Thank you guys for tuning in.
It's not saving puppies, but it is saving podcasting, and podcasting saves puppies. So
yes,
there you go.
You will never know what happens to Gnarl's pups.
I know, right?
Yes. Imagine a world without Gnarl stories.
Whatever you do, whenever the reveal for those pups has to come, though, you have to break out some Sarah McLachlan music. Yeah. So.
Imagine a world without
showing off his pups one by one, all big-eyed, while Sarah McLachlan sings, was it in the arms of an angel or whatever?
Yeah.
Or and then he finds the runt and eats it.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last one is the runt, and he kind of gives it this look, and the camera closes out as he's like,
because you didn't adopt it.
Right.
If you had adopted it,
it wouldn't be brunch.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Random dog pun.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.